Police states aren't a joke. Hundreds of millions of people have been killed by government in the last 100 years. The police state is about robbing you and your family. The police state is about setting up a control grid so that the system can literally render you down to the level of feudal serfs and slaves. But if the people can be awakened to this threat and can understand how they're being controlled and manipulated, we can defeat this system and restore our constitutional republic. We are not revolutionaries. We are restorationists. We want to restore the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, and our republic for which it stands. We want to defeat and overturn the global governance structure that is using false flag terror, staged events, as a pretext to go after the American people. And the similar system is being used worldwide against populations. Each and every one of you watching today is an integral part. The actions and the decisions you make on whether you join this fight against the New World Order or whether you sit on your ass are absolutely vital to the future of this species. Individuals die, but our species goes on. And if you don't have an instinctive understanding of that, and if you're not threatened by the type of oppression that is unfolding in our society, you are asleep. You are blind. And I tell you now, this is the time to awaken to the New World Order. What's happening today is real and is a threat to every free-born person on this planet. Your water is being poisoned. Your food is being poisoned. Your air is being poisoned. A planetary dictatorial world government is openly being formed. And the goal of that world government is the establishment of a global kill grid to murder the majority of the world population. We know the government's staging terror attacks. We have the executive orders. We have the John Warner Defense Authorization Act. We have Rex 84. We have the Military Commissions Act. We have the Civilian Inmate Labor Camp Program documents. And Police State 4, the rise of FEMA, is a powerful salvo of truth against the mountain of lies that is the New World Order. All your friends and family that have heard about death camps, concentration camps, FEMA camps, who've been in denial, who've been lied to by the mainstream media, can watch this film, Police State 4, The Rise of FEMA, and learn the truth. They can see the facts. They can check it for themselves and discover the truth.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportion. We annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all United States corporations. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizen can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense, prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. We must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Two, Graham's affidavit. We've interviewed the former foreman of the Oklahoma City Grand Jury. We've interviewed police officers. We have a very clear picture of what happened that day. A very clear picture. And in fact, Jane, if memory serves, I've interviewed her in years. I remember that she even saw some of the people that she saw working in the building planting gray sticks of butter with wires, who had federal passes as maintenance people, on some of the news footage. And I've talked to other witnesses that said they saw those men in there. And then on the news after the bomb had gone off, they'd say, well, that's him. Well, that's him. John Doe number two, Iraqis involved, all protected by the U.S. government. Jane Graham is a ninth floor survivor of the Murrow Federal Building bombing in Oklahoma City in 95. She's made a video affidavit after she watched the video cover up in Oklahoma. In that video, she recognized seeing two men who were caught on camera walking hurriedly away from the building after the bombing, holding walkie-talkies. She says that she had noticed these men in the building prior to the bombing wearing General Services Administration maintenance uniforms, that she did not recognize GSA employees. And we have her affidavit up on Infowars.com. Now, there's a new article out by Red Dirt Report, a great outfit out of Oklahoma, and it boils down. Again, she's one of scores of survivors and witnesses that basically tell the same story. Okay? And now you have Terry Nichols saying in a sworn federal affidavit that McVeigh was a black op operator. You have McVeigh separately saying one day it'll come out the government did this. The ATF, 30 seconds after the bombing in full bomb gear, telling medics, patch me up, I was on the ninth floor. She was on the ninth floor. It was almost completely destroyed. Asinine. While Oklahoma and the rest of the world respectfully remember the 168 people who died in the bombing of the Alfred P. Murrow Federal Building in Oklahoma City, one survivor of April 1995 blast, Jane Graham, wants her questions about what really happened that day answered once and for all. Graham, a native of Chicago, was working for HUD office on the ninth floor of the Murrow Building that morning, told Red Dirt Report that there were a lot of strange things going on in the weeks leading up to the bombing, things that she shared numerous times with federal agents, things she felt were ignored. This including the presence of maintenance workers she did not recognize, military people in the parking garage, and more unusual activity. But one of the key figures, the bomber himself, Tim McVeigh, was spotted in the federal building on a number of occasions, and by multiple witnesses, I would add. It was a couple of weeks before the bombing. I had seen McVeigh in the building prior to the bombing around the first week of April. Graham said, rode up the elevator while she was heading to her office on that morning. And we have the former head of Air Force Weapons Development saying the building was blown out, not in. And you have the seismographs and the blast points. I mean, it just goes on and on. Hoppy Heidelberg, the grand juror foreman, being threatened by the FBI, and cops being killed who spoke out. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I'm going to have her back up in the next few weeks for a full hour. She's very gracious, but I hate to even cover this without going over all the evidence. Let me just read a few more lines and we're going to her. She said McVeigh was in military fatigues. I looked at him and said hi, and he simply looked straight ahead. He got off the sixth floor. I turned to someone else in the elevator and said, well, he's certainly not very friendly. Another time, Graham said, he was in the elevator again and got off on the ninth floor where the Secret Service and BATF offices were located. Another unusual event, Graham recalled, was on Friday, April 14, 95. She had parked in the Murrah parking garage, and she noticed three men standing together on the south side of the parking area. One of the men was holding what looked like floor plans. She said at first she thought about the recent phone problems that had been plaguing the building and problems with gas fumes in the area. I watched them carefully, Graham said. They were standing behind a green light station wagon, like an old country squire wagon. It was filthy, and I couldn't see the plate on it. As she watched the three men, one of whom was wearing dark clothing and two wearing short sleeves and jeans, one of the men held a stack or a roll of what appeared to be telephone wire. And then we'll have her finish up with what she was told, and she talked to other people, military personnel, people that said they were FBI, people she'd not seen before. It just goes on and on. People approached her, identified themselves as an FBI, wanted to know about the men. I mean, it just goes on and on. And Jane Graham on record, it's been all over national TV. She was up there on the ninth floor. She's one of the survivors. And Jane Graham, we appreciate your courage, and you're speaking out again, and it's good to have you on with us.
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, go ahead.
No. I mean, you go ahead. I mean, millions are listening. Tell folks what really happened.
Well, I think you've covered a lot of it, but going back to, I'll try and keep it, the most important part was the Friday before when I saw the men down below. I was asked about the three men, and I did tell them that they wanted to know what I thought they were, and I said, well, I would have picked the man in charge, being a surveyor, and military. I said that was the first two things that came to my mind when I saw them, and they had, and I gave them a visualizing the size of the plans that I watched them, which they were holding up, and I was told that that is exactly the size of plans that plans are when they are, in fact, drawings of the building and the garage area. And the one, the third gentleman was tall, very, very nice looking man, dark hair. His hair came right to his collar. He had very dark eyes, dark hair. He wore a black cowboy hat with a silver trim on the hat. And he had black jeans, black boots, black shirt. And I really got a good look at him. He turned away from me and went to the north wall and was having a cigarette. And he did not want me to watch him.
And, of course, we now know, I mean, you saw him on the news, Andreas Stossmeyer,
yes,
the son of a top SS general,
yes,
is an admitted black ops commander for German and U.S. intelligence and was at Elohim City being run by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yes, and that was who I identified later on. I also identified one of the men when I was finally shown some pictures, not by the FBI, not by the police, but through a private investigator who was giving me, and I identified Gary Hunt as one of the gentlemen that I saw in the building the day before and the morning of the bombing, with another man who was about 5'8", light brownish blonde hair, very poor, very, very bad complected. When they both came out of the stairwell, they looked directly at me, and then they bent their heads down and turned around the corner to go around the hallway past GSA, because that is an outside door there to the outside of the building on the west end of the building. So I was very much aware of them, and then I was going to go upstairs, and I thought it was odd that they came down the stairwell, and as I said, they were going quite quickly, and I was talking to somebody else about the fact that I had seen some maintenance men, you know, some outside maintenance men. And it wasn't just right after that, when I was waiting at the elevator, a gentleman came up to me and said he was talking to some others, and he said, I'm from the FBI, and someone told me that you have seen two maintenance men. And I said, no, I said, I didn't. And of course, at that time, I was thinking whether they were talking about the elevator, which we'd had a problem with, or the phone company. And it wasn't registering to me at all about associating them with the two GSA dressed maintenance men. And it was only later on, after I saw a video and saw the two of those men, I realized this is the men that they were referring to, who somebody obviously had told them. I assume it was the men that I passed, that I had seen them. So that, I think, and that in itself probably saved my life at that point, because Terry Yakey had seen so much and he was killed. A lot of people were murdered because of what they saw or what they wrote or what they did.
We'll be right back.
Jiggy was cop of the year that year. He went in, local Oklahoma City cop, saved a bunch of people. And the last person he talked to was his partner. He'd hidden evidence of it being an inside job in a storage locker outside town. He'd been told to get off the case by his superiors. And the last phone call to his partner said, "I'm being tailed by feds." And then he was found murdered and tortured.
That's right. That is correct. And I did go. I wrote a letter to Stephen Jones. I wrote a letter to the FBI. I wrote one to my doctor and another person, and I told them exactly what I saw. I gave them descriptions of the men. I gave them what they were wearing, everything I could about them and what had occurred. And I never did hear anything from anyone regarding from the FBI or the police about looking at pictures of anyone, trying to identify anyone. And I did talk to one attorney, and he said, "Well, I know the sketch artist, but the police, they're just really, really good. We'll get a sketch done." I said, "Fine." Never heard from him again after that. It just dropped. You know, that was the end of that discussion. I went with Debbie Nakanashi to Washington several times on this case. I met with one of the men who was on the attorney's staff there, you know, dealing with, I wanted information about, well, how does one deal with this as far as from the legal aspect of the government and for review and so forth. And he said, well, there were only like, I think, three men that, you know, deal with a lot of this, these issues, and that really, you know, there wasn't anything that they could do. And I tried to see the congressmen and senators from the state of Oklahoma. None of them would see me or talk to me. And the only person that would talk to me was James Traficant. And I did meet in his office. I met his assistant. And at that time, he had requested from GSA all of their files. And the FBI had come to him and told them that they wanted to go through all of the files that he had to white out various things that would be incriminating. And he told them they didn't have the authority to do that. And but he would give them one day, and they said, because he said they would not be able to do that. And his assistant told me that they had threatened James Traficant and said, "We will get you for this. You know, we're going to get you over there."
And it's now been declassified that the current attorney general, back at the time, was the deputy, and the memos have been released in his emails where he said, "We've got to have a full court press. This is like D-Day. We've got to get down to Oklahoma City. This is on the 16th, and cover this up, or it's over for us." And we can even pull those emails up. I've read them on air. And so that clearly shows they were going into congressman's office and saying, "You shut your mouth." There's so much to talk to you about, Jane Graham. Expanding on this, what about your run-ins with Tim McVeigh in the weeks before the Alfred P. Murrow Building was blown out from under you?
Yes, he was there. He was there a number of times going up. As I said, he went to the sixth floor. I think he even went to the fifth floor and certainly the ninth floor. He had gone up there. And I really thought that he was with the military units there and going in to report, or up on the ninth floor, they had ATF and other operations up there. And I thought, well, whatever he's doing, he's new and he's just, you know, reporting in and to whatever he needed to do. And the comment I made about his not talking was the fact that everybody in that building would always be very pleasant and always friendly and, "Hi, how are you?" You know, regardless if you didn't know them, they spoke. And he absolutely would just look straight ahead, totally military. And also, one of the things most people do not know is that the bomb squad had parked across in the church parking lot that morning and had their dogs out. And one of the postal workers, a friend of mine that went with me to Washington several times, she had seen them out. She was told her job was threatened. She was told, do not discuss this with anybody. And she went to the union in regards to that issue, and got that was taken care of relatively quickly. It was important because when I went up to the seventh floor, I ran into Trish Nix, who was killed in the bombing, and she said, have you seen the bomb squad? And I said, no, I haven't. And she said, well, they've been in the building. So I knew right then that there was something going on. And, of course, like I said earlier, in 2 weeks before that, when I was in the coffee shop, I was sitting at a booth, and right next to me on the other booth was another lady talking to a friend of hers, telling her that she had called a friend who worked at the FBI office at 50 Penn Place, and that this friend had received a fax stating that there was going to be a bombing in the federal building, and I was very, and that not to, and she gave it to her supervisor, and he said, don't worry about it, we know about it already. And I was concerned because my, at that time, daughter-in-law had been working at Bellius, which is in 50 Penn Place, and I said, oh my God, surely, when I came home, I said, surely someone is going to try and bomb 50 Penn Place. Of course, that's where FBI was. And I thought, all those people, you know, are there. They have nothing to do with the government. And
well, Jane, let me back you up on this, because some of this has come out in newspapers, but I have an employee whose dad was working in a federal building in Dallas, and they got that fax the day before that a federal building was going to be blown up. And then I know someone separately who was working in a federal building at the time on the West Coast who remembers those faxes coming in. And it's even come out in the news that there were some warnings. But you've got McVeigh in the building. You've got all these guys running around. Going back from some of your earlier video testimony, and I haven't seen it in years, but am I correct in saying you didn't just see wiring? You saw gray sticks of butter?
I didn't know what it was at the time. I saw it looked like putty, and I thought, I didn't know what it was until someone told me, oh no, that's C4. That's what that looks like.
Now, who had the blocks of gray putty?
Those were the two. That was the man that was with the gentleman who was holding the plans in the building.
And so you're walking by these guys, and you'd never seen these maintenance crews, but they're there with wires and gray putty.
No, not the two maintenance men.
This is separate.
These other three men were entirely different men. I would have bet money on the two being military, absolutely military. The other one, who I later identified, was a Strassmeyer. But those three were different.
Okay, hold on. We've got a final segment. It's clear we're going to have to get you up again and really debrief you on all this. You've told the story, and it's been proven to be accurate, and you have other eyewitnesses, those that haven't died. And the big issue is they're replaying the same propaganda again. Who do you think's behind it?
Coast to coast, direct from Austin. You're listening to the Alex Jones Broadcasting Network.
Well, here's the headline. Murrow bombing survivor says feds involved in blast that killed 168 in 1995. And it's chilling. I was talking to Jane Graham during the break, and I said, do you see the same propaganda? Clinton saying, I hope there doesn't have to be a terror attack to make the Tea Party shut up. Where do you see this going? And what she said was chilling. But finish up. So it was Strassmeyer and the other two guys in the garage you saw with the gray sticks of putty or butter. Specifically, where do you think this is all going? Who do you think from the evidence was behind this?
There are several things. First of all, the ATF that morning, and I think people need to understand, that morning before the bombing, there were two men dressed with ATF raid jackets on, talking to a third gentleman outside in front of the Murrow building that morning. And I then found out you don't wear those unless there's something going down where they need to be recognizable immediately. That's one. Strassmeyer and the other two gentlemen that were in the garage the Friday before, yes. What I saw them have, I was told that what they thought was the putty was, in fact, actually what was I gave a description of, and I was told that's C4. And what I am saying is that if anyone goes back in history, history repeats itself always, but governments have always, one of the things they have done, they go in and they take care of creating an incident, creating a bombing or whatever, in order to come back in and fix it so that whatever has happened, they've got a solution of how they're going to fix the problem, whether it be they're going to say, well, the terrorists did it. We now have to have additional protection. We need to have blame it on the militia. We need to blame it on we need to have a Patriot Act. We need gun control. What they've always got an agenda to take away rights. And to sell it to the public in mass as we're protecting you, we're the good guys, we're taking care of you, we're protecting you. And I'm saying that this was done, they can claim that they had no part in it because then they don't have any liability issues involved in it. And even though they were behind it and they, I imagine and feel very confident in, that they did have McVeigh on their payroll. They did get Strassmeyer out of the country with his luggage, with everything. A straight shot through was told, I understand from others, they were, he's told, do not go through his luggage. Just give him a free pass to go back to Germany. There were other people who were involved, and money that came from the Islam countries and involved, and so they could go from a very technical big organization and having other people do their work through FBI, CIA, and then say, well, we don't know anything about it.
Absolutely, Jane.
Somebody else.
Jane, Oklahoma City bombing survivor. We're out of time. In closing, though, are you concerned seeing the same buildup of propaganda claiming domestic groups are going to attack again?
Yes.
The government's doing unpopular things. They need to play the part of the victim again. I see pre-programming for another Oklahoma City. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I think they will do something. I really believe if it's not a bombing, I think it's going to be something that will have to do with water supplies or germ warfare of some sort. But they're planning ahead to do something big in order to blame the militias, blame the Tea Parties, because the American public is getting fed up with having their rights taken away, being taxed to death, and government is controlling everything now.
Jane Graham, we're going to interview you again in the near future for a full hour.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Christopher Monckton is our guest, probably the leading crusader with the most accurate information over the last 15-plus years, fighting the Green New World Order, as the UN calls it, in its internal documents. Sir, flesh this out, because, I mean, walk through this world government they're setting up, these incredible documents that continue to get leaked and declassified and stolen by some that are being put out. Really gives us a picture and lets us know there's no longer any denial. This is open global tyranny. And we now have the head of the Gaia movement over in England last week in the London Guardian calling for a global dictatorship, saying we can't have freedom. The people are, quote, too stupid. We must have rationing. I mean, these are open tyrants. Even Hitler and the communists and other despots were not this open, selling tyranny as if it's mother's milk.
That's a wonderful phrase, selling tyranny as if it's mother's milk. I must remember that one. That'll do well in speeches, I think. I think you're quite right. There is an extraordinary failure of will on the part of the peoples of formerly democratic nations like Britain, for instance, which now lives under the dictatorship of the European Commissars. And, of course, it's therefore very easy now for people like the leader of the Gaia movement to come out and say, we want dictatorship, because, of course, we've already got dictatorship in Europe. And we've already got cap and tax because, hey, we weren't asked about it. None of our legislators were asked about it. It was imposed by the European dictatorship. And we all had to salute and obey. And we had no say in the matter. Now, the great thing about the United States of America, and I'm speaking here in Washington, D.C., on Tax Day, is that the United States is different because it has a constitution. And the constitution at Article 1, Section 1, says this. It says all legislative power herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and House of Representatives, full point. Now, that means there is no dictatorship here for as long as the people of the United States are willing to keep themselves free. And that, I think, is the significance of the Tea Party movement, which came from nowhere little over a year ago. The grassroots suddenly decided they were going to stand up and be counted. And I know that President Obama and the other world government wannabes are saying that this is astroturf, that is paid for by fossil fuel industries or other wicked, evil capitalists who want to keep the world free and prosperous. But the fact is, this is a stirring of popular opinion, such as has probably not been seen in the United States since that day in 1773, when your forefathers decided to pour tea into Boston Harbor. Now, I've got a tip for you. Try pouring it into the teapot next time. It tastes better that way. But remember this also. The British tea tax was thousands of times cheaper than Obamacare and millions of times cheaper than what would happen to the United States if any part of the cap and tax regime now being wriggled and struggled through the Senate were actually to be passed.
And Obama is separately saying he's going to have the EPA enforce it regardless. That is open tyranny. And Club of Rome behind eco-fascist purge to criminalize climate skepticism, an article at prisonplanet.com, quoting Club of Rome members saying we should all be arrested if we criticize anthropogenic global warming. I mean, they are openly saying arrest us. They've called for your arrest previously, when in truth they're the ones that have been caught committing this fraud and these crimes, and you called for Al Gore to be arrested.
Yes, indeed. I think the real criminals who are, I call them the global warming profiteers, and in Al Gore's case, the racketeers, where he is now ignoring the order of a High Court judge in the United Kingdom that found 9 serious errors, in his mawkish sci-fi comedy horror movie. He deserves to go to jail.
Ward Monckton, so much to go over here. I can't even keep track of it. Every day a new scandal. Every day it's proven that all their science is fraud, premeditatedly. And then this one, Financial Times of London. Global warming graph attacked by study. A key piece of evidence, climate change science, was slammed as exaggerated on Wednesday by UK's leading statistician in a vindication of claims that global warming skeptics have made for years, namely Lord Monckton, who first exposed the hockey stick. And now we know that man has been involved with Jones and others at the core group engaging in this, what can only be called racketeering. So let's go over this and the countless other scandals that have come out, because it's positive this is all coming out, but it's almost like they're coming out too quick. We don't have time to take each one and get it out to the public.
It is quite extraordinary how, in the last few months, since the ClimateGate emails were first revealed, there's been a kind of breaking of the logjam, and scientists who for years have been wanting to write papers saying what nonsense this is are now finding the courage to do so. It's very interesting, and this statistical report from the UK is very significant because the UK has been the most true believing of all the sappy world governments on this issue. And so much so that in 2004, when the Russians under Vladimir Putin wanted to get a briefing for their Academy of Sciences on the global warming scare, it was the British government they asked to send a delegation to do the briefing. And Sir David King went across with those people. However, Dr. Ilarionov of the Russian Academy of Sciences, who is a formidable mind, is also very careful, and he got together half a dozen skeptics, one of whom told me the story of what happened. Sir David King began coming out with the usual string of lies about how the climate was doomed, etc., etc. Fact after fact was simply incorrect. And eventually, Professor Paul Reiter, who was one of those who'd been invited, the world expert on malaria, who says that global warming will not affect the spread of malaria pretty much at all, he went along and he stood up, look at, he said, it's no good, Sir David King. These facts are simply not right. And he began challenging Sir David King on his facts. David King was furious. He had never faced such a challenge before. He stormed out of the meeting, taking the British delegation with him, leaving the field entirely clear for the sceptics, who then gave a marvellous, thorough, comprehensive briefing to Dr. Ilarionov, who, in summing up that meeting, in just 3 pages of text, gives one of the best summaries of why global warming is not and can never be a global crisis that any National Academy of Sciences has ever delivered. But here's what happened next. Tony Blair met Vladimir Putin at one of these endless world government summits of the G8 or the G20 or the G77 or whichever piece of arithmetic you like. And he said, look, let's do a deal. If you agree to say that global warming is terrible and shut up your Academy of Sciences, get it to say the opposite of what it believes to be true, I will let you into the World Trade Organization with most favored nation status. That's what goes on. There's no truth behind any of this. And as you're quite right, it's now very, very difficult to keep up with the endless tide of information about how it's the sun and it's the sea and it's the clouds, and as we're about to discover from Iceland, it's also volcanoes that really dominate the climate.
Let me raise that. I have a Twitter question for you. It says, Lord Monckton, are they aware that the volcanic eruption in Iceland will decrease global temperatures?
Yes, they are aware of that because they know that if you get a really big eruption, it looks as though this one may come into that category. It's slightly early days, yeah, but if it carries on for a day or two more as it is, then yes, it will be a big one. Then that throws so much volcanic ash up. As you know, it's shut down the whole of Europe and the Atlantic, and all flights in Britain are already grounded. Though, curiously, Reykjavik Airport, which is upwind of this, is still free for traffic. But when you get enough of that volcanic ash getting up into the atmosphere, it stops the sunlight reaching the ground. And that causes global cooling of around half a degree, sometimes even 1 degree Celsius, but only for 6 months to a year, because eventually, of course, the rain comes and the ash, which is heavier than the air, gradually falls back to the ground and provides very nice fertilizer for everybody's soil. Does no harm. And then the sunlight can get through much as usual again. However, what we did notice after the last really big eruption, which was Pinatubo in 1991, what then happened was that there was a temporary reduction in cloud cover following the year after that eruption and persisting for about a decade. And that, of course, caused an enormous increase in global temperature. So we may, paradoxically, as a result of this eruption, see a similar reduction in cloud cover again, and that will cause a temporary global warming that could be quite rapid. And, of course, this will allow the other side to blame it all on CO2.
But Lord Monckton, hold on. Couldn't we just pay Al Gore a couple billion, and he would give us an indulgence and wave a magic wand and make the volcanoes not erupt? Because, I mean, after all, Danny Glover and then a UN official said that the earthquake in Haiti was caused by global warming, and now they're claiming the Chilean earthquake was caught. But so if we just pay them some money, will they stop the earthquakes?
Oh, just like that, yes. Al Gore has only to stretch out his hand and the entire world will stop spinning round and we'll all fly off. No, I mean, of course, it's ridiculous. One knows perfectly well that global warming cannot possibly cause or have any connection with earthquakes. They are driven by a completely separate mechanism, a long way below the Earth's surface, wholly disconnected from the climate above. And it is simple rubbish to try to suggest otherwise. Of course, you've noticed it's the fashion now that every kind of weather that is happening, you've just had the coldest winter on record in most of North America, and of course the warmest came straight out, the climate extreme said, oh yes, that's what we would expect from global warming. So here's the thing, we expect earthquakes from global warming, we expect warming from global warming, we expect cooling from global warming, we expect floods from global warming, we expect droughts from global warming. Hang on a moment. All we're really saying is that whichever direction the climate changes in, they're going to blame it on global warming.
But that's my next point, Lord.
To do with global
Lord
warming
Moncton,
or not.
Lord Moncton, interrupt you because we've got limited time and these facts are so key. We know they've been caught in fraud. We know they have an agenda to control our lives and become kings over us. We understand that. And the general public's beginning to understand that. But for me, going back years, it's just the asinine level. I can go look up the federal government numbers on polar bears, and they've gone from roughly 22,000 30 years ago in our area of the world, in North America, to over 50,000. And so when Al Gore says the polar bears are all dying, we know it's a lie. When they say in the Arctic, penguins are dying because they're drowning, we know they're an aquatic bird. I mean, the level of asinine lying, but the one I want you to talk about now, because we're showing video of this, both a 20-year time lapse and then this year's time lapse from satellites, we know the Arctic expanded, and this is admitted, by the greatest level in the last 30 years. That's admitted by NASA, and I'm showing a NASA satellite composite right now of it growing this year. And then I've seen the environmental phonies on the news saying it's not true that the ice caps are melting. I mean, they are denying that the sun comes up in the morning. They are outrageous liars.
It's extraordinary that on the polar bears, for instance, there were only 5,000 worldwide in the 1940s. Now, depending on which survey you read, there are 25,000 worldwide, and you've seen one that says there are 50,000 just in North America. And the fact is that that's not the profile of a species in imminent threat of extinction, is it? Likewise, the penguins, and of course in the Antarctic, the sea ice has actually been growing for 30 years. And I was talking to one of these true-believing scientists about that the other day, and he said, oh yes, but that's caused by katabatic winds coming down off the Arctic ice, off the Antarctic ice cap and freezing the sea. And of course, yes, it is, because the Antarctic has been getting cooler over the last 30 years, as the records very plainly show. Though you won't see that reported in the mainstream news.
But that's what I'm saying, Lord Moncton. It's the boldness. I've never seen total contempt for the public, and I guess some of the public really are dumb as a box of rocks, to tell them the Arctic and Antarctic are in danger of completely melting within the next 5 years, as Al Gore was just saying a few months ago at Copenhagen. I mean, it is an asinine fraud to tell school children that it's all melting when they know good and well it's getting bigger.
Well, just to go to the Arctic and give you the latest figures, the beginning of the spring ice melt in the Arctic began later this year than at any time since records began. That's the truth of the matter.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Okay, Dr. Bob Bowman thought he would be to his home by now, but he's not. He's on the road in his RV, driving his RV across the country. We've interviewed Willie Nelson from his bus before going down the road, so we'll see how this goes. But he's going to be to a parking spot in about 20 minutes. So we're honored to have him. Robert Bowman is a former director of the Advanced Space Program Development for the U.S. Air Force and the Ford and Carter administrations, and a former U.S. Air Force lieutenant colonel with 101 combat missions over Vietnam. He holds a Ph.D. in aeronautics and nuclear engineering. And despite his involvement in the space program and defense, he emerged as an early public critic of the Strategic Defense Initiative, SDI, a.k.a. Star Wars, during the Reagan administration. He is also a critic of George W. Bush's administration's national missile system. And he's a 9/11 researcher, truther. He's a great man, and we're honored to have him on with us. We're going to talk first, before he gets parked, about the latest 9/11 truth, about the talk of Iran supposedly having a nuke and they're going to nuke us. The government now saying Homeland Security's number one threat is the American people. I mean, we knew this was really being set up in the shadows, but now it's out in the open. The draconian Orwellian system we're sliding into. We're going to discuss this first with Dr. Bob Bowman. Then we're going to get into Star Wars, how advanced it was, what he can talk about that's been declassified or leaked that he's allowed to discuss, versus what he projects they've got today. Dr. Bob Bowman, good to have you here with us.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be back.
There is so much going on, so much happening. But before we go to break, what do you think of 15 months into Barack Obama's administration? What do you think of him?
Well, of course, like so many, I'm very disappointed, particularly with the expansion of the war in Afghanistan and extending it into Pakistan, and even talking now, he isn't, but, you know, others talking about the possibility of going into Iran and the new justifications of that based on this supposed Pentagon determination that, gee whiz, they might have not only nuclear weapons but intercontinental ballistic missiles by 2015 if they get enough foreign help. I think that's a bunch of baloney myself. Ballistic missiles are an extremely advanced high technology project, and there are very few countries in the world that can pull that off, and some of them have been trying for decades, like North Korea, without success. I think this is just another justification doing for what a minority in the Pentagon want to do, and whether they're doing it because the Israelis want to do it or they're doing it for some other dumb reason, I don't know. But with our military already overextended and depleted and demoralized, it would be a horrendous mistake. Iran is much stronger militarily, a much larger country than Iraq. And, I mean, it would be, I think, the end of the United States as we know it.
Well, sir, I heard Fox News last night on the radio saying Iran now has intercontinental ballistic long-range missiles, and we've got to go in. And it's all over the news today, just like they said Iraq had nukes or WMDs. I mean, this is a replay of 2003, is it not?
Of course it is, and it's total malarkey.
Well, stay there, sir. We're going to come right back and get into this disaster for the United States. We've got the Russian president saying it could be the beginning of World War III. We're going to talk about it all on the other side with Dr. Bob Bowman, and we'll discuss Homeland Security now saying they're worried about Iran nuking us with a suitcase nuke and working with domestic groups. Homeland Security's got to be used on the right-wingers now.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We're going to go inside the secretive Star Wars program that's really a preemptive offensive sneak attack weapon system with Dr. Bob Bowman, the former head of the Star Wars program. He joins us as he hurtles down the highway in his RV. Robert Bowman is a former director of the Advanced Space Program Development for the U.S. Air Force, holds a Ph.D. in aeronautics and nuclear engineering, flew 101 combat missions over Vietnam, bombing missions. And he joins us today, and we really appreciate him coming on. For stations that just joined us, some people that just joined us, we were talking about the new hype to go into Iran. They're changing the last letter of Iraq, the Q, and putting an N on it to make Iran. And they're saying they've got secret nuclear technology nobody else has got with no proof to make enriched uranium, weapons-grade uranium, without centrifuges. They're saying they've got ICBMs that can hit us now. The Pentagon says maybe in 5 years. North Korea is much more advanced and can't ever get them off the ground. They blow up almost every time, just right on the pad. Sometimes they go up a few thousand feet. I mean, even our own government in the 50s, 60s, and 70s had large portions of their ICBMs when they were being tested blowing up or blowing up before they left the atmosphere. But, oh, no, and they've got magnetic pulse weapons, the news says, that could destroy all electronics. Here's Reuters. Iran missile may be able to hit U.S. Here's another one. Times of London. Pentagon chiefs raise threat of attack as Iran taunts U.S. with missile display. So we can show our weapons, but they can't. And here's another one. Al-Qaeda chief in Iraq. Captured, killed, never actually existed, recaptured, now killed again. They've announced over and over again they kill these Al-Qaeda guys and never retract the last guy they killed, even though they claim they kill him again. And then here's another one over here where they're claiming that Fox News is claiming that, in fact, I'm looking for my article, just print it again, a Fox News headline, Osama bin Laden has a Facebook. And then it admits in the next line it's not even him. So anybody could create a Facebook, say they're threatening us as Osama bin Laden, and it always turns out it's fake, but that's the proof that they're going to kill us if we don't give all our rights up. And as we went to break, Dr. Bowman, you were saying this is all a fraud and that this could basically end the United States. Go through that scenario for us.
Well, we're being lied to again, as you know, about all this stuff about Iran as justification for the war that a few people want to get us into as if we didn't have enough illegal corporate wars of aggression right now. And if we take on Iran, which is much bigger and more powerful than Iraq was, and we're still bogged down in Iraq, where are we going to get the military for that? Our military is already overextended with what they've got on their plate. And, of course, what is Russia going to do? What is China going to do? And would we be taking on much more than we can handle? And I believe we've already got more than we can handle, and we've got to get out of where we are, and absolutely no attack on Iran. It would be another false attack based on lies. And I don't think they're going to do it because most of the people surrounding Obama are they're trilateral commission, they're globalists, but most of them are not neocons, and I think they're a little more rational than Cheney and his minions pulling George W. Bush's strings. So, and the people in the Pentagon now are more rational than Rumsfeld and some of the generals he had working for him. So I don't see them succeeding in pulling this off, even with this massive campaign of lies. But, you know, I'm going to work very hard to prevent it, and I'll probably have to put out another open letter to the Pentagon, just like I did in 2007, to keep Cheney from attacking Iran then.
All right, let me stop you there.
I'm going to have to do it again.
Doctor, let me stop you there, and we'll go over some of what you said in your letter, and they did listen to you. We had Fox Fallon refuse in 2008 to launch an attack on Iran then. So they've had a lot of people resign that basically stopped Cheney. And how that ties into 888, for those that don't know, the Times of London and other publications have now talked to diplomats and others who were in the meetings when Cheney engineered through NATO and Georgia and Israel the sneak attack on South Ossetia to test the Russians, and that Cheney was saying, let's go ahead and have a nuclear war with them. And the head of the Russian general staff, the Air Force head, went on TV 3 days into it because they were landing more NATO forces in Georgian capital, and said, we may have to have a nuclear war with you. And so this shows the megalomania, and it appears with Gates and others that we still have the Cheney people in there, and they're replaying all the same propaganda that we saw before Oklahoma City, before 9/11, and before the Iraq war, all rolled into one. We've got FEMA drills of improvised nuclear devices going off. We've got Obama saying the number one threat to America is now domestic groups or Iran setting off nukes inside the U.S. Again, Dr. Bowman, couldn't they stage a false flag terror attack in the United States to blame it on Iran? I mean, isn't that their only card? It appears they're going forward with this, and absent a huge false flag or a nuke going off in Paris, who knows what, staged by the military-industrial complex, how are they going to get this, and is that a danger?
Well, I think you're exactly right. The only way they would succeed in getting a war against Iran is another false flag attack like 9/11, blaming it on Iran. And, you know, back a couple years ago when that B-52 flew from Minot to Barksdale, as far as I know, there's still possibly one nuclear weapon missing from that bomber. And if the neocons have that, then they could use it in a false flag attack, blame it on Iran, claiming that Iran smuggled it in a suitcase. They can't simulate an intercontinental ballistic missile attack on the United States. That's too complicated. Everybody would know where it came from, and they can't get an ICBM and a launch pad for it to Iran. So I think you're right. A false flag attack is the only way they're going to pull this off. And the thing is that the 9/11 truth movement is extremely valuable because we're continually letting them know that we're watching. And if they try something else like they did in 9/11, they've got to know that we're watching and we're liable to catch them red-handed, and that'll be the end of them. And so that's one of the great values of 9/11 truth. It is deterring them from this kind of thing. And but I know there are some crazies there who would like to try it anyway.
Well, let's take the Minot, Dakota situation where they flew them down to Louisiana. And again, the reports are there is a missing nuke. I mean, this was in the news. This happened. And then more than a dozen of the people who were at the bases who blew the whistle committed suicide or died within a week, which adds another layer of evidence that this was an attempt to smuggle a nuke out of the chain of custody with the military. And again, for those who don't understand what me and Dr. Bob Bowman are getting at here, you have to put your mind in the mind. Put yourself in the mind of the globalist, of the controllers, to realize how they're doing all of this. And they'll never get away with an Iran attack without staging an event. And then now FEMA, these secret documents got leaked. FEMA admits they're real, but is ordering websites to remove them. That in May, they were going to have multiple simulated improvised nuclear device detonations in different parts of the U.S.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones, only on the GCN Radio Network.
ThePatriots.us is Dr. Bob Bowman's website, ThePatriots.us, and valuable information up on the site. He'll be with us a half hour into the next hour. Then we have an eyewitness from the Alfred P. Murrah Building, Jane Graham, who saw McVeigh and other feds inside planting the bombs. She was told, oh, those gray sticks of butter are just for repair. They're just putting some wires in the different maintenance areas for everyone's safety. She rode on the elevator with McVeigh. And this is just one of many witnesses we've interviewed before. But since the feds are getting ready to do this again, we're here on air going back over it. So we're going to be talking about that with Jane Graham coming up in T-minus 1 hour. Okay, Dr. Bob Bowman, you were hurtling down the road in your RV. You've now gotten to your stop for the night, so we've got you settled here. We appreciate you coming on short notice, and we really appreciate you coming on because I know you've had a lot of health problems lately, and your information is so precious. It was good to get to see you at that 9/11 Truth event a month or so ago here in Austin, Texas. And we appreciate, again, your tireless effort to warn people, much of the time at your own expense. Okay, I'm going to stop now. Go back to what you said as we went to break about when you really woke up to this global criminal network, because we know that Rumsfeld came right out of the L.L. Lemonster crew years after he left. I mean, he's been there forever, the youngest and then the oldest Secretary of Defense. He sat at the feet of these cold warriors who wrote up Operation Northwoods, of course, the plan to stage 9/11 style attacks. So you were getting up to Star Wars and what it was really designed for. Then we'll talk about the real space program that's military versus the kind of tinker toy front that the public knows as NASA. Dr. Bob Bowman, you've got the floor.
Okay, Alex. Well, yes, I found out firsthand that these crazies were planning on using my Star Wars program as part of a first strike against the Soviet Union. And so I started opposing them on that. And pretty soon, of course, I found I had less freedom of speech in industry than I'd had in the military. So before long, I was out of industry and unemployed, and I have been in that position now for 28 years. And when I started fighting Reagan and his crowd, General Danny Graham and the crazy George Keegan and Senator Malcolm Wallop and Edward Teller and Dick Cheney and whatnot, and the ones that didn't die off, like Ted Teller and Danny Graham, the ones that didn't die off came right back with George W. Bush. But what they did back then in 1982 and 1983, they got Reagan, who had not the clue what he was doing, and I don't think George W. Bush did either. They were useful idiots to these global criminals. And they got Reagan to sign a defense guidance document in 1982, which did two important things. One, it on the larger scale, it ended our policy of using the military to prevent a nuclear war, and we went from a policy of war prevention to one of war fighting. And in that document, written, of course, by Richard Perle, part of the Cheney crowd, in that document, he ordered the Department of Defense to prepare to fight and win a protracted nuclear war. Now, that's chilling. And that was leaked to the press by my old friend Bob Scheer, who used to be with the Los Angeles Times. And eventually, of course, because he was a good, honest reporter, he got himself fired. He leaked that defense guidance document. And there were many of us, I think, at the time, who said, well, you know, when we went into the military, it was to protect the people of this country by preventing a nuclear war, not going out and fighting an aggressive nuclear war. So we wouldn't have any part of that kind of policy. The second thing that that defense guidance document did was to order the Department of Defense to deploy Star Wars weapons in space as soon as possible. And the document assigned those weapons two missions. The first mission was to destroy opposing satellites and seize total military control of space. The second mission was to destroy targets on the surface of the Earth from space without warning. There wasn't a word in that document about shooting down ballistic missiles. That whole peace shield garbage was a total myth for consumption by the American people, who would never have approved Star Wars weapons for offensive purposes.
And now, we've gotten another bird's eye view into their mindset with Cheney having Georgia on 888 two and a half years ago, launch that sneak attack. And we've seen Iraq, we've seen Afghanistan, they now want to go into Iran. We see this doctrine in the PNAC documents from 2000 where they say we need new Pearl Harbor events, we need terror attacks to get the American people to go out there and wage these wars of empire. But this isn't even an empire for the American people. It's an empire we pay for. It's an empire for these big mega banks and corporations. Please continue with the Star Wars program, but let's start at the beginning. Because it's now declassified, it's now public, it's now admitted. We heard that Ronald Reagan launched Star Wars in 81.
Well, I retired in 1978, and the program had been going on actually since 1962. At that time, they called it BAMBI, which stands for Ballistic Missile Boost Intercept. Isn't it lovely the way they take our weapon systems and give them a nice, cuddly name like BAMBI? And when the Soviets, for a while, were working on a similar system, they dubbed it the Killer Satellite. So, anyway, that's just, a little trivia. But at that time, in the mid-1970s, we were working on several pieces of it. Most of what we were working on was toward a system of laser battle stations. And these laser battle stations were being developed in bits and pieces. We had a contract with TRW for the laser itself, chemical laser. We had a contract with Kodak and with Perkin-Elmer to build a 50-foot diameter actively cooled mirror which could reflect the laser beam to its target without burning up.
All right, you are a go. You've got it. We see the earth now. You've got it. We see the earth. You've got it. We see the earth now.
Those meteor gun weapons, would that be DU, depleted uranium?
Yes, and I never said that at the time, they're a combination of titanium and depleted uranium, titanium shell with the depleted uranium interior, and guided by GPS. And I never revealed those details at the time, but a couple of years later, I was debating one of the General Abramson's colonels in the Strategic Defense Initiative organization, and I started talking about the pure offensive purposes of Star Wars weapons. And in his rebuttal, he said, "Now, Bob, you know very well that those titanium cones fired at the Earth from space and directed by GPS, that program doesn't exist." And he said, I said, that's interesting because you just revealed classified details that I've never talked about and certainly didn't mention in my talk. So obviously the program does exist. And So since then, I've been able to tell more details.
Now, when we talked, you said you're also allowed to reveal that it's robotic space planes, and you've been out of this for a long time, but.
Yep.
I mean, from what I've talked to people at NASA here in Texas, people who were on the original Apollo program and beyond, and some of them we've had on air, and you know, these are guys, you can watch the NASA film footage, and there they are on Mission Control. They say that more than 90% of NASA, which is run by the Pentagon and by the president, is military, and that basically Wernher von Braun drew up the space shuttle in the 30s, it's a 1960s, 70s, 80s technology, and that the space program we see is really a facade for a larger black op system, and that the militarization of space is just off the charts right now. And I mean, what can you speak to along those lines?
Right. Well, space has been militarized for a very long time. Most of the stuff up there are military satellites of one kind or another. Either reconnaissance satellites or military communication satellites and various other things. The weapons themselves may not be up there, but the gun sights are up there and all the rest of it. So the whole military command and control system is space-based. So my task really... when Reagan was trying to do all this stuff, was not to keep space from being militarized, as it already was, but to keep it from being weaponized, because that's the line we simply did not want to cross. We understood that when we put weapons in space, that, and particularly if they were the kind of stuff like Star Wars weapons with the kind of offensive capabilities they represented, that the Soviet Union would have no choice but to start shooting them down as fast as we put them up. And, of course, that was a task that was fairly simple. The these space-based weapons are extremely vulnerable. After all, they follow fixed orbits, so you always know in advance exactly where they're going to be at any given time. The mirrors that we were designing could be destroyed by such exotic anti-satellite weapons as a bucket of sand or a thimble full of sewing machine oil. So I always told the government, look, these things are never going to have any defensive value because of their enormous vulnerability. They will be totally useless to an innocent party sitting back trying to defend himself, because all the opposing side will do will be to knock out critical elements in the system first, and then launch their missiles. And even if you made these things so that they could, in fact, shoot down ballistic missiles, which they couldn't do at that time, they would be useless because they'd be put out of operation before the missiles were fired. And I thought that was a pretty good argument. I also pointed out that having these Star Wars weapons on both sides is the ultimate military lunacy, because it rewards whoever shoots first. And what we had at that point in the 70s was a stable nuclear balance, because whoever fired first lost the war. And the new technology changed that.
All right, Doctor, let's go back. We got plenty of time to continue, but while we've got you, I want to go back.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about the robotic space planes?
Not very much. I mean, if you take a design roughly based on the shuttle and you eliminate all the people from it and all the life support systems and all the oxygen and all the food and all the piss tubes and all, you know, all of that kind of stuff, and make it robotic with some computers more advanced than the 1960s, you can make the thing a heck of a lot smaller and make it perform a heck of a lot better for a lot less money.
So you can only hypothetically talk to us about what's going on, because that's classified.
Right.
Well, now NASA admits they have been developing space planes, and the Pentagon admits, you know, just like the B-1 bomber, the B-2 bomber were secret for many, many years with the stealth bomber for 20 years before they rolled it out. I mean, can you talk about how big the military NASA is versus the public NASA?
Shorter answer to that is I don't know anymore.
You said you can speak to X-ray lasers. The way I saw the news describe them, one system is a nuke detonates, and there's these rods in space. That sounds pretty dangerous to the rest of the satellites and things, and then fires a just incredibly high-powered array of beams through it, destroying the weapon system in the process. Is that one facet of X-ray lasers?
Yes. That is the original design of Edward Teller in the early 1970s. And he worked on it. There were several underground nuclear blasts that were designed to test this, to see if they could actually get a X-ray laser to work when pumped by a nuclear explosion. And they never were able to get it to work. And I lectured on this extensively in the early 1980s when Teller was still pushing it and had gone public with it. And it is really a crazy Rube Goldberg scheme, and is supposed to pump these beams of X-rays out these tubes in the tiny fraction of a second before the whole thing evaporates because of the nuclear explosion. And those beams of X-rays have to be extremely accurately pointed because they have to be pointed at where the ballistic missiles will be when the X-ray beam gets there. And from hundreds or perhaps even thousands of miles away. So we're never able to get the pointing of those long, wimpy rods accurate enough to do any good. We were never able to get the X-rays to actually laze. There were a whole raft of things that were just totally ridiculous.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Every day, sometimes multiple times daily, Newsweek, Time Magazine, London Guardian, New York Times, write articles saying I'm calling for violence when all we've ever done is called for peace and nonviolence. PBS is here today. Nightline just called. They want to do an entire 8-minute profile on Alex Jones only. It is very creepy because I never intended 14, 15 years ago when I started getting on air to have had this big of an effect and to have learned as much as I've learned. But it's a testament to all of you out there, what you can do if you take action. But I don't like to talk about myself, but I do get some concern and try to analyze this. Dr. Bob Bowman, what does it sound like to you that they're demonizing all of us now, claiming we're for violence, but specifically singling me out? You've been doing this longer than I have. Do you have any advice for me?
Well, I'd say to keep doing what you're doing and be just as public as you can, because the more in the public eye you are, the less they can do to you. The people who get picked off are usually the ones that very few people have heard of. And so I'd say just keep out there in the public eye and give them a black eye. Keep doing it, Alex. That's all I got to say.
But why are they coming after me so much?
You're effective. You're effective. That's why.
You know, I committed to this just like you committed to telling the truth, and I passed the point of no return a long time ago, but it is creepy to have the eye of the beast looking at you.
I'd like to talk about, we talked a lot about the past, I'd like to talk a little bit about the present and the near future, because I'd like to talk about a little about our plans for how to take back the country and stop all this craziness.
Okay, we're going to do that. And we'll also have you back because you're a treasure, Dr. Bob Bowman. But, you know, the old saying, when you're over the target, you're getting the flak, like when you had SAM missiles getting shot at you in Vietnam. But while we've got you picking your brain, we talked during a break about CERN. If you think it's a danger, you gave me your answer. We also talked about, and you said you were aware of it, that the Air Force has talked about they're trying to develop antimatter weapons. I mean, isn't that dangerous? Even the testing of those. Talk about CERN versus antimatter weapons.
Okay, well, CERN, the equivalent of Brookhaven cyclotron in the corner of Switzerland and France there, the European version. CERN, I've been there, I've been through it and looked at their operations. I don't see anything nefarious about it. Scientific knowledge can always be used for good or evil, and all too often evil, and they're producing new scientific knowledge. They're also playing around a little bit with the collisions between matter and antimatter, and that theoretically can put out an awful lot of energy. And it is dangerous. And the experiments have to be extremely carefully controlled. Now, as far as taking antimatter and weaponizing it, I have never heard of any effort which has been anywhere near successful in making weapons out of this stuff. It's too hard to produce, too hard to contain. I don't see anything of that kind in the foreseeable future.
But it is dangerous from the physicists I've read, mainline physicists, that the Pentagon admits they are playing with it and trying to isolate it. I mean, couldn't that create potentially some type of chain reaction?
Yes. It is dangerous, and there are a lot of things that are going on that are dangerous that I have been opposed to from the beginning, like HARP up in Alaska, and I've been up there to that facility. I think it's extremely dangerous to dump huge amounts of money, of energy. It's money to the people who sell them the gas that they're turning into energy. Dumping all that energy into the stratosphere is extremely dangerous. They're talking about weather modification. They're talking about mind control. They're talking about all sorts of weird things. But they don't really know what they're doing. And it could have very negative consequences that they don't know how to control. So I have been against the HARP facility from the beginning.
Well, here's a quick question. Here's a quick example. About 4 years ago, in the interviews on YouTube and Google everywhere, just Alex Jones interviews head of HARP, we had the private PhD director, but the military runs it. And when I was contacted by HARP, and they said, you want to clear up rumors, we'll have the director on. I was contacted. And so then comes the day to get him on for an hour-long interview, and I've got some colonel bossing me around during the breaks, and they've got the line under their control, fading him down several times. Then he starts talking about, we have a lot of fun. He's like a mad scientist. We can even, ignite the atmosphere some nights and create artificial aurora borealis. Then they turn him down, gripe at him during the break. I mean, this was bizarre. But, I mean, it was really the director of HARP we had on. Why would they contact me to come on, and then why would he then start talking about igniting the atmosphere? This didn't sound too safe.
Yeah, well, I guess figured that the colonels could control him. But, you know, when scientists start talking about their stuff, they just start blabbing a lot of times. And sure, that's what happened. But we're trying to infiltrate the Congress. We're trying to get rid of almost all the incumbents. In 2008, we had about 30 members of our organization, the Patriots, run for Congress around the country, but they all ran as Greens or Libertarians or Independents or write-ins, and of course nobody got elected. So we're taking a different tack this time. We're having each of our chapters groom people within the chapter to run in the Democratic and Republican primaries. On my website, I have a 3-minute video I call the Smoking Gun video. It's all about World Trade Center 7. I use it with friends and family, and I use it when I lobby in Congress. And in 3 minutes, they see the BBC broadcast World Trade Center 7 collapsing before it did. They see Larry Silverstein talking about pulling it, and they see the building come down from about 12 different views. An apparent controlled demolition of an intact building with no visible fires. If that doesn't convince them that the whole Bush official conspiracy theory is a lie, I don't know what will. And
well,
you can download that from my website.
And I would add the caveat, you have 6 of the 10 commissioners saying it's a fraud and a cover-up. I have AP and Raw Story here, revealed Ashcroft, Tenet, Rumsfeld warned 9/11 commission about line it should not cross and told them don't investigate the attacks themselves. And as a former Intercept pilot, I think that's some of the most convincing information when you've given your speeches in the past explaining that you were once an Intercept pilot and they stood down.
Absolutely, they did. Hijacked airliners do not fly around for an hour and 40 minutes without being intercepted.
What about advanced weapons platforms? And we know the Nazis had the jets first, and now I've seen mainstream articles claiming they had primitive A-bombs. Did you ever run into any of that?
Well, I know they had the jet. I don't know about any A-bombs. Lasers, yeah. We have much more effective and powerful lasers now. But again, it depends on what you want to do with it. And you can knock aircraft down, you can do a bunch of stuff from space, but there's a lot of things that you still can't do with them.
What's more effective from your knowledge, the space-based or those big DC-10s with the big chemical lasers mounted in them, so air-to-ground or air-to-air anti-missile?
Again, it depends on what you want to do. If you're trying to shoot down a missile, which is what they advertise these things for, doing it with a 747 or any of those things is absolutely crazy because they themselves are so vulnerable.